SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. And joined by Tony Black. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I have to be honest. I missed the show so far this morning. I've been running some errands, and I just got off the phone with Richie Vega. I even missed going out there this morning to the track. He was just breezing some horses. And I says, you know, it's a little too cold for an old jock like me, Rich. He says, oh, I don't want to hear that as an excuse. He says, we miss you here at the barn. I said, well, I miss everybody at the barn, and I miss you. But the weather has to get a little bit nicer for me to put my boots on. My boots won't get on. I can't get them on when it's this cold. I don't know what's wrong. I can't get them boots on this morning.
They're just the leather a little too stiff. You would think cool weather, it's easier to put boots on.
I don't understand what it is. I just can't get them on. It's like, I think it is the cold weather stiffens up the leather. It's got no stretch to it, and maybe my feet are growing.
That's what it is. It's
but we're gonna get out there after this next little storm pass by. And he told me, he says, some of the horses are really doing good. And Collegeville Girl is going to be out 3 to 4 months recouping from all her bad experience. But they've drained her lungs. They've got her feeling good. He showed me a video when I was out there about a week ago, of actually how they tube and drain the lungs of all the fluid that was accumulating in them, and how they medicate them from inside the lungs with, I guess, antibiotics or whatever they do. But it's a shame. Here's a filly we thought had nothing but potential to make money and win races right away, and she's on the back burner for a few more months. But you know what? The bright side of it is she'll have 100% recovery with no long-term damage to any of her lungs or anything. And that's the bright side. She's going to do good after this. And she's got nothing to take away from her intelligence and her ability to run. So we'll be looking forward to getting. And I bet I won't miss any days coming out and getting on her when she goes back into training. I love that filly.
No, I appreciate you updating us. I meant to ask last week, I think, and it's too bad. I hate to hear that. Tony, one thing I wanted to do with you today. Yesterday, I sent out, recirculated on Twitter, the piece by Dan Ross about the situation that Victor Espinoza finds himself in, and he's going for some further tests and looking for a third opinion, because he's got very differing opinions from two doctors right now as to his recovery. And it seemed like he was on the verge of, you know, getting ready to come back at the end of the month. Now that's kind of on hold. And he's also been dealing with insurance difficulties and some pauses in his coverage when it's come to the physical therapy. And that's interrupted his ability to come back on a timely basis. And it really speaks to the difficulties of the jocks can face. I mean, even with the first $1 million in coverage, it basically gets expended, in no time at all. You and I have talked about this here and there, but explain what the jocks deal with when it comes to having to be whether independent contractors or depending on what each individual jurisdiction, you know, some states have better, more comprehensive workman's comp coverage. New York, California, I think Florida have better coverage. What give everybody a primer on this?
Yeah, there are five or is it six states now that they have workman's comp. You named three of them, and then Jersey's one of them. Maryland, Jersey, California, I think Iowa. I forget those, but it's five or six states. When it comes to the jocks and what you're dealing with, well, number one, whenever you're dealing with any kind of head injury or spinal injury to the spine, it's a really difficult situation, and you'll get opinions from doctors that'll be varying opinions from doctors. I know personally I've dealt with some varying opinions when it came to injury that I had to my back, where I broke my T5, 6, 7, 8, 9, shattered my T7. Lucky it didn't penetrate the spinal cord. The splinters all went around and didn't penetrate, and there was no paralysis. But the first doctor that I went to, that I was at, he said, "Well, this is the end of it for you, Tony. You know, your career's over. Just face it. You're not going to recover and be able to ride again." And you know, that's varying opinions. I went to, you know, I spent 5 months in recovering and recouping and in braces and didn't get the surgery where they put a rod in my back or anything like that. And I wound up very fortunate recovered, and in 5 to 6 months I was back to riding. You know, like I said, a couple of doctors said, "No, it's over." And then one said, "Well, it depends on you and how much you put into your recovery and what you can deal with." And I, knock on wood, haven't had a problem. I know he's dealing with insurance issues. California is a workman's comp state. The tracks in, you know, are, we've negotiated with racetracks where they get all of them carry $1 million catastrophic injury accident coverage. So any accident that occurs or anything that occurs to a jockey while performing the duties of a jockey, which is a broad spectrum of definition, while performing the duties of a jockey. You could be at the racetrack, you could be at a recognized training center, you could fall down the steps going to the paddock, and you're performing the duties of a jockey, you're covered. I understand that there are some workman's comp issues that he's dealing with. I don't know the details of them, but of course I'm sure he has health insurance that he carries, a family coverage or a health policy of some sort, which would take over when the I would assume they would take over. I know in Jersey my policy would take over when I depleted the $1 million of catastrophic injury accident insurance that the track provides. And if I say I got hurt in Jersey or Pennsylvania or a track in this area, I know it's when it comes, like I said, to opinions of doctors, sometimes doctors don't understand what a jockey does. In fact, the general public at times doesn't understand what a jockey does and how athletic of a performance that they are involved in. And, you know, that's just the general perception of being a jockey. People don't realize, you know, and that means doctors, and it's a highly stressful athletic event. You are an athlete. People don't realize jockeys are athletes. And in being an athlete, and being an athlete over a long period of time, your ability to recover and your ability to perform can be impeded by, you know, injury. But you also are an athlete. You do know how. It's ingrained into your thinking how to recover, what to do to recover, how to rehab injuries and put 100% into it. You know, when you rehab an injury and you're just some guy that goes through the motions and, you know, goes through a rehab process, it doesn't work always as well as it should. But if you're an athlete and you're going through a rehab process, and you're putting 110% effort into rehabbing. You know, you're not just, when they say, oh, do this, do that, and you're just, you know, counting and going through the motions. You're actually stressing the area that needs to be stressed. You can recover. I mean, and I'm not an expert in the field of rehab, but I do believe when an athlete totally puts an effort into rehab, and if there's a possibility of him recovering 100%, that effort will bring true that possibility of recovering 100%. Don't know the extent of his injuries, but I'm sure as an athlete, Espinosa's putting 100% into it. The doctors that you're dealing with, well, that's another story, you know. Maybe they all have a medical opinion, and some of it's based strictly on medicine, and others maybe have a medical opinion that's based on medicine concerning an athlete. You know, athletes are sometimes different animals that you're dealing with. It's not just the run-of-the-mill person, like I said, trying to rehab something. You know, they're athletes. They know what it is to perform. And, of course, there's usually a great desire to get back to performing. You know, when you're getting banged up as a jockey, it's not, is this going to happen again? I've said this before to you. It's, how long is it going to take to get over this? And I'm sure Espinosa, with the success he's had in this business and the desire to be a jockey, is still there. He's probably saying, how long is this going to take to get over this? And I wish him well, and I'm hoping for the best to see him back in the saddle in a short period of time. Because it's been, it's been a while, and I'm sure he's getting itchy to get back in the saddle and perform to the level that he's performed. The one thing that jockeys don't want to do is if they do get back in the saddle and they can't perform at a level that they're satisfied with, or they're used to a high level of performance that they're used to being able to have, they probably don't want to do it and be just, you know, average or below average or below what their expectations are.
How much has changed, Tony, on the insurance front? And, you know, I know that, you know, you separated from the guild at a certain point, but the public, I think, doesn't really understand or have much of an awareness when it comes to, you know, how much responsibility falls to the jock, how much falls to the racetrack, how much is umbrella coverage by something like the guild, and how has that changed? How has that those relationships changed over the years?
Well, over the years, I joined the guild in 1970, and until it went through all these transitions, when you joined the guild, within a very short period of time, they provided racetracks, they made sure racetracks provided coverage, but then they also provided through a group plan health insurance, you know, for the jockey and for the jockey and his family. Now, in the, I believe it was in the 90s or late 80s, 90s, that started to go through transition because, you know, the number of members that we had in family coverage, the guild finally wound up realizing that with the jockey contribution, you know, out of each mount and how much they would pay out of the treasury, the Jocks Guild treasury funds, they couldn't afford the health insurance for the jockey and the family. And, you know, it used to be at one point you took $6 out of each mount, and three of it went to savings and three of it went towards your insurance, which, you know, that chances are that didn't even near cover buying health insurance for the jockey, you know, the $3. I mean, even in the 90s, health insurance was, you know, substantial premiums were paid for health insurance, and more so now. Eventually, the guild got out of the health insurance for business. And they had to discontinue that. I know at one point the guild, as a member, and I was part of the a member, and I was the national treasurer for a while. We were paying well over $1 million a year to cover our membership for health insurance, and $1 million wasn't even keeping us in the game. And finally, we had to discontinue providing health insurance. I know now they don't provide health insurance. They do provide a small life term policy, life insurance policy, which term insurance is pretty cheap. And I believe, you know, now I'm not sure what they take out. I think it's $11 a month. So much goes towards the Guild funding, and a small portion of it, I think, still goes into a savings for the jockey. When it comes to insurance, I mean, insurance is high. You know, when we get at Philadelphia Park from the slot revenue, $250,000 that the jockeys get to put towards benefits for jockeys. And so you set a standard. You know, if you ride so many 100 mounts a year at parks, you could qualify for a health insurance plan, and it wouldn't be, and it would be very little contribution needed by the jockey. They don't, I don't even know exactly what they're doing with that, because as of 2 years ago, when I was more active, that $250,000 wasn't covering the jockeys that were considered Philadelphia Park jockeys, you know. And at one point, of course, when the Guild went belly up, we formed an organization over there, Victor Molina, myself, and Harry Vega, and we formed a 501c3 organization called Philadelphia Park Jockeys. And then we had access to that $250,000, and we used it for health insurance and a small disability policy. Trax also carry a disability policy. I think it's $150 a month after 7 days, I believe, or maybe it's after first day of accident, but you can't apply for it right away. But $150, I mean, $150 a week, I mean, what's that do? I mean, it's just, that does very little. And disability, disability insurance for jockeys is very high, you know, so it's hard to come by. Health insurance is high for everybody, and we just hope that no one sustains a very catastrophic injury, because $1 million, as you stated earlier, $1 million doesn't go that far.
No.
You're talking about catastrophic injury. I mean, paralysis, spinal, head injuries, things of that nature. You eat $1 million up in couple months, a month? At their hospitals, between surgeries and all the expenses that go with rehabilitation, rehabbing. You know, when you talk about paralysis, the rehab on a person for paralysis and the equipment and the things that they need to rehab is a tremendous expense. $1 million doesn't mean anything anymore in health insurance.
No. We're going to talk to Neil Howard too. Neil speaking on behalf of Roddy McKenzie, the exercise rider that was badly hurt down in New Orleans. Tony, how do exercise riders, how do they make it? How can they? I mean, there's as much risk for them. In some ways, it's even more dangerous, because the mornings there can be, you know, there's way more horses on the track during training hours than there are in races.
And you're exposed to just as much chance of accident.
Absolutely.
And danger, if not more so, because, you know, a jock might ride five a day, and, you know, it's during a race, you're on them for a few minutes, and you're off of them. We're an exercise rider dealing with, I know guys that get on 10, 15 horses a morning. You know, now the thing about it is, if they're under salary, in the workman's comp states, because they're under salary, the workman's comp will cover them, and the workman's comp will cover them, I think, in other state and just about every state if they're under salary. But there are so many, and, you know, being under salary, everything has to be above board. You know, they have to be paying taxes, taking taxes out. They have to show they are employed by that trainer, and then workman's comp will cover them. They're not considered independent contractors in states that don't cover independent contractors. But so many of these exercise personnel, you know, they're going from barn to barn, they're under salary to no one, and if it's, they're not covered as independent contractors in states that don't have workman's comp, or like they're considered the same as a jockey that that isn't covered by workman's comp. If you're an independent contractor in those states, like in Pennsylvania, you're an independent contractor, you're not covered, whether you're an exercise boy or a jockey. So they're really at a disadvantage when it comes to their coverage, because they're an independent contractor. Independent contractor, you can say, well, I can go, and so many of them don't buy health insurance and be responsible for what they should have being an independent contractor. There's upside to independent contractor and there's a downside. A lot of the upside is to the person that is paying you, because they don't have to cover you. You know, there are. I got an article that I was breezing through, and I should have read it more closely. But I don't know if you know DJ Stable, Leonard Green.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We had his son on the other day before Christmas.
The guy's his dad is some guy, DJ Stable, Leonard Green. And I got an article that he had written, and it gives the upside and downside on both sides of it, to an independent contractor, to an employee, and everything, you know. And there's some upside to independent contractors, and the downside is that most of the time you're not covered and you get hung out to dry if something happens. You know, you're not an employee. The person that you're working for doesn't have to assume all the responsibility for you as an independent contractor, as he does for an employee. So, you know, you can get around and make some more money being an exercise boy, getting, I guess they're getting $20 a pop to get on these horses, and that's the upside as an independent contractor, and you can float around and get on as many as you want and get paid. But the downside is, something happens, you're hung out to dry if you don't take care of your, if you're not responsible enough to take care of your own insurance responsibilities.
Right.
So, yeah. And listen, people make money in this game, whether they're jockeys or exercise personnel or whatever. And in the, you know, you start out a lot of times at such a young age, and how many of us have the education to know what the upside and downside of this type of employment is? We're kids. We start out. We're kids. I was a kid when I started out. I had some good advice, didn't follow some of it, and followed some of it. But the guild was different then. You know, you, like I said, the guild, when you joined the guild, you had a small disability policy and health insurance policy for you and your family. That's history. That became history in, I guess it was the 90s, late 80s, 90s. So everything's kind of changed when it comes. And the one thing that is changing and tough to deal with is health insurance premiums. They're sky high, and that's the way it is. And, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. And I just advise people that are out there, and I touch base with kids that are, you know, galloping horses and doing, make sure you're covered. Make sure you have insurance. But you know what? Probably goes in one ear and out the other, because everybody on the racetrack, when they start out, myself included, thinks we're invincible. I'm not going to get hurt, Steve.
Yeah. No, I know. I can imagine.
That's the mindset.
Well, I mean, when you see somebody at the level, the victor, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
with having to deal with this, and also the uncertainty from the medical side, where you know he's now seeking a third opinion, it's got to be very, you know, it's got to be unsettling, and it has to, you know, the anxiety side has to, you know, weigh on you and make it, you know, make it that much tougher to, you know, to recover. But as always, as is the case with so many riders, nobody wants the terms dictated to them as to, you know, the time to leave the stage. And that's what, you know, that's what is always so hard. And, you know, it I hadn't thought about it until now, but of course his brother, Jose, you know, who was an outstanding journeyman in New York for years. And he had a head injury that ended his career. And it was very hard for Jose, you know, to accept. I mean, Ramon Dominguez, there was never a question that Ramon was you know, going to be able to come back and ride. But, you know, Jose thought there, you know, there was, and you know, then just could not get clearance. And it's very difficult, you know, Tony, and you've come back and gotten clearance, so you know what it's like to be told, oh, you're not going to ride again, and overcoming it. You know, this is the toughest part of the equation.
Yeah, I try to take the light side of it and say, oh, yeah, my wife was sitting there with me, and she started crying as soon as the doctor said that, and I always kid about it and say, yeah, she saw those big paychecks, you know, flying out the window. You know what? When it was said to me, it didn't even register, Steve. I said, listen, I'm walking right now. I'll be riding, you know, and the doctor said, no.
Amazing.
Yeah, you know, but you know what? Espinosa knows what he's dealing with, and you know, you get opinions because, of course, you want the confidence that you're doing the right thing and you're not going to cause injury that'll be lifelong disability. Of course, we understand that. You know, whether it's head injuries or back injuries, but he has to. I'm sure he understands opinions. You know, everybody's got one. And I think at times the negative opinion is a motivator. You know, as long as, you know, it isn't explained to you like, well, if this happens, that happens, you will not walk. Or if this happens, that happens, you could not sustain an injury to the head of that nature and survive. You know, if it's explained to you like that, maybe that sends up a little red flag and you think twice about it. But when it's you're walking around and you're getting on horses and, you know, you feel like, you know what, everything's kind of working. It's working, you know. Then opinions are just that. It's just someone's opinion. Everybody's got one, and some of them are worthwhile listening to, and others you just use them as if they're negative. Sometimes you use them as a motivator. Say, you know, I can prove that to be wrong. I can overcome that. You know, I'm not buying into that. And I think athletes do that in just about every sport. You know,
probably.
There's probably been a lot of athletes have been said, oh, well, you'll never play ball. You'll never do this. The one thing I have a personal goal right now that I'm trying to really further is this CTE concussion protocol.
Right.
And it's catching on in so many states. And you know what, Steve? I just keep banging away, you know. And the one thing I do have advice for these young riders, adjust that chin strap. I've seen kids hit the ground and the helmet lands in one spot and the jock lands in the other. You got to have that chin strap where it keeps the helmet on your head. We had a jock fall here, and like I said, helmet went one place, and his head went to another place. We had another jock, Ruben Silvera, got knocked out, I believe, the other day when he fell. And they said when he was in the hospital, he'd come through, and he was all right. Well, chances are he had a concussion. I didn't get the update, so I'm maybe speaking out of school. But, you know what, head injuries, they don't have to have fractured skulls to be head injuries. CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, concussion, it's just constant trauma to the head, you know, to the brain, can cause disabilities down the road. Concussion protocol is so important. It has to be put in place nationally, but from state to state, let's get it done. Pennsylvania, let's get it done. Concussion protocol. Maryland's got it. Florida's getting it done. Pennsylvania, let's get it done.
Well, Tony, you're doing a great job with it and getting noticed and advancing it, and we applaud that. We appreciate, as always, the opportunity to get your insights on these topics, and we'll talk next week.
All right, Steve, and keep up the good work. I'm going to start listening right now. I'm done doing what I had to do outside. Take care, Steve. Thanks. Keep it up.
Get ready to do some shoveling.
Yeah.
Right.
I got a snowblower last year. It hasn't snowed hard enough to use it for one time. I'm looking forward to a heavy snow so I can get the snowblower out of the garage. In fact, that's what I was making sure it started this morning.
Tina, we're gonna have to do the same thing in advance of what looks to be the first significant snow for the Eastern Seaboard. Tony Black, everybody, always tremendous. Let's take a break here. Andy Serling, who's been pushed back from Tuesday to Wednesday to Thursday. Worked out okay. Andy was traveling Tuesday, and Haskin needed Wednesday, so Andy jumps in this spot. He'll join us next. Later, Rich Eng. I'll see if Seth, you know, we couldn't get to Seth yesterday because of the outage down in Florida, so maybe we'll get Seth in here too, and I promised you I want to get to Neil Howard because I really want people to be aware of how they can help Roddy McKenzie. Back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're stars now, can't you see?
We're back at the races. Coming up toward, what do we got, 20 minutes plus to the top of the hour. Andy Serling, New York Racing Association, and a staggered week of racing on the schedule with the Monday holiday coming up. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday this week in New York. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Kind of bracing, glad I guess. Snow? We got snow on the way? Is that the...
Not really. I don't think. Maybe
I guess we do, yeah, supposedly. Tina's
excited?
Plotting.
You're going to be shoveling some walks to make a few dollars?
Yeah, the neighbors, you know, I go out there and it's, you can bilk them.
What do you charge for a walk?
These days, you can get 20 easily for the walk, you know.
Oh. Do you have to share that with Tina or do you keep it yourself?
Well, it depends. If I get to use the snowblower, she manages the snowblower.
You got to pick the gas.
Exactly, exactly. That's always, you don't even need forecasts around here. All you have to do is go to the grocery store and see people like panicked, and it makes me laugh. And you can appreciate this because you grew up here.
It happens here in New York. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Right?
Craziest thing I've ever seen. There's a deli across the street from me that's never been closed for at least 50 years. And it's like, what am I? I'm not really worried about it. I mean, people go to the market like it's like there's a comet coming towards Earth. In which case, they don't really need to.
That's the funniest part. Up here, everybody, the snow falls, everybody clears their driveway, and everything's fine. And so it's like, why are you out buying milk and butter and eggs and bread like you're going to be snowed in for 3 weeks? It's the craziest thing. It's hysterical to me.
It's weird, I agree.
And when I lived in Manhattan, no matter how much snow there was, you could walk around the corner, like you say, to the deli. It's like, what, you know, you could, everybody's still working, everything still functions. Although I will say, I can let everybody know, cancellation today at Santa Anita. A lot of rain.
I talked to Frank last night, he didn't even come up. I guess it was unexpected.
No, and they should be okay for tomorrow, they expect. I have not talked to Frank, and I feel remiss.
I missed you for a second. Go back. I'm sorry, Steve.
I have not talked to Frank yet since the season started, actually.
I really...
I really should get out I should check in with Frank Miramonte. I'm sure he's pleased as can be, and say you can hear it in his voice. He sounds great. Yesterday we got knocked off the last segment, so I didn't get a chance to have Seth Merrow, who I figure is still sky high from his Orangemen and beating Duke.
His Orangemen. He's adopted them now. They had a big win.
No, he's always, even when they're lousy, he's an SU grad.
We're topics here, aren't we?
Well, no, a little
to talk about and so much.
No, there's plenty, but I didn't know if you wanted to slip that in.
No.
All right, because I was looking forward to getting to him yesterday. He's got to be.
But he was out. He was still at Desperate Annie's.
He might be. Yes, exactly, exactly. By the way. Since that bring up eateries and so forth here in Saratoga in the area, and I made my first trip to.
Like I said, so little to talk about and so much time to do it.
I can do whatever I want. Hamlet and Ghost, which you've enjoyed, and it was my first experience. We went with the Dicksteins. We really, I thought it was terrific.
Who picked up the check?
We split. Actually, I was ready to pick up and skip.
Disappointing for you.
Well, I was happy to pick and pick it up.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely. That's not a
Skip.
Shortcoming on my part.
I would Skip.
He's terrific. You know, he's retired from the Times Union.
No, I did not know that.
He has. At the end of the year, he took a buyout. They were, and he was after a long. He's going to be. He expects that he's going to handle the track photography for the season. But if you want Skip for a wedding or for a bar mitzvah,
well, I either get bar mitzvah or married in the near future. I'll
But anyway, the place was very good, and you that's been one of your favorites, apparently.
I have a lot of favorites.
I was impressed. I we'll be back. Hamlet and Ghost, right in the corner there of Maple and is that Maple? Yeah, Maple and.
Sort of
like Caroline
was Maple. It's actually on the Putnam side of Maple. But okay,
yeah, there you go.
Maple becomes Putnam at Caroline Street.
That's right. There you go. Beyond Gaffney's and going down the toward the park. Well, I was impressed. And
you ever see Five Easy Pieces?
Not in ages.
The scene in the car when they pick up the two women, Jack Nicholson and Karen Black, pick up the two women hitchhikers. They say they're going to Alaska. Charlie, the other one says, "Don't tell them about it." And soon, everybody will want to go there. That's the scene that precedes the famous toast scene.
Yes.
Because the women are in the restaurant with him.
That's right. That's right.
Or can't order the toast. Well, that scene is still famous. People remember that scene.
Absolutely. How do you not?
I don't know. It's kind of gotten dated.
Nah.
I think modern people don't realize all these great movies that Nicholson made. What made him famous? They must think of him as an old guy who sits by the bench at the Laker games, not realize movies like 5 Easy Pieces and Chinatown and Cuckoo's Nest and all those great movies he made back
then. Speaking on that topic too, I don't know if you watched the Golden Globes last Sunday, but
thankfully not.
When Jeff Bridges got the Lifetime thing, and mm-hmm. when they were showing clips of Bridges and his career, when they show the scenes from Thunderbolt and Lightfoot.
Thunderbolt and Lightning with Clint Eastwood.
Great.
I was watching The Last Picture Show, which might be his first movie, right?
Close to it, probably.
I was watching that the other night. It was on TCM. Incredible movie. So many great people in that. Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah.
And Sybil Shepherd, which I think it is her. I think it is her first movie, and it's before The Heartbreak Kid. I think maybe not. Maybe it's not. And Timothy Bottoms
Yep.
Sam Malone. Well, it's a great movie.
For those that have never seen it,
that Last Picture Show,
or Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, which is going to be it's got to be 45 years now.
In 100 years, yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's still great.
Who directed that? Somebody good directed that.
Not Peckinpah, no. Michael Cimino.
First of all, it's Cimino.
Like, Jesus, you're unbelievable.
Well, he is kind of a famous guy, right, Steve?
Okay. I remembered, right. at least I remembered that he directed it.
What's his next movie?
Before Heaven's Gate?
Yeah, between the most famous movie he made was between Thunderbolt Lightning and Heaven's Gate. Come on, Steve.
Deer Hunter.
I also watched recently.
We need Jay Hubdy for this. Hubdy, I need. I'm putting out a call.
Cimino directed Thunderbolt and Lightning. Very good.
Lightfoot, by the way, it's Lightfoot, not Lightning.
Is it?
Yes, it is. So we're tied.
Oh, okay. I actually always had the name title wrong.
There you go. Yes, you have.
Yeah, interesting.
Can I name drop? I know how you love this.
Oh, Jesus, it's gonna be awful.
You know who I saw Thunderbolt and Lightfoot with at the Showcase Cinemas in East Hartford.
Wasn't that when you and Ann Margaret were dating?
Not yet. No, Richard
now
Plepler.
Later. Sorry,
Richard Plepler of HBO, my childhood friend, and went
you
to
don't
school.
Name drop if anybody's ever heard of him.
I think some people have heard of Richard.
Probably not listening to your show, but we all have famous friends.
I love it. All right, let's turn our attention to the action on the Oval. But there hasn't been any, so what do we have?
So little to talk about and so much time to do it.
Well, let's do this. I want you to acknowledge, because I haven't had a chance to discuss, Honor Up. What a nice job Michelle Nevin is doing with Honor Up.
I've been on Honor Up all year, so I feel that I was way ahead of the curve with Honor Up. I thought he was good last year, and he kept getting in. You know, when Mott ran him in the Lexington off a layoff, for Mott to run in such an ambitious spot in that situation is so unusual that to me it signaled that he was obviously training very well, like a good horse. And if anybody's never watched the Lexington, they should watch it again, because he was in position to possibly win that race coming to stretch. And I don't know what happened, but Jose Ortiz basically eased him. And I mean, it's obvious, you can see it. And obviously, Jose thought something had gone wrong or something, and it hadn't. And I liked him in two subsequent starts because of that. And one of them came up, I don't have the PPs in front of me, but one of them came up a sloppy track that was a big speed track. And the other one, he was chasing a pace that was incredibly fast, that just completely incinerated in the stretch. And I thought he ran a lot better than it looked, and I was kind of looking forward to him. And then Mott ran on the turf, and unfortunately, he actually won or ran second in not particularly good race. He got in a perfect trip. I think he won, and he got a perfect trip. He gave up the rail and beat a bad horse. And then they ran him back on the turf, and he was wide, and he ran okay fourth. But Michelle Nevin, they gave him Michelle Nevin, and she put him back in the dirt, and everything sort of changed, right? He's run now four good races for a second and three wins. And running faster figs. Now he was fortunate. The Gold for the King was blocked in that Safe Florida Sandy, and you know, whether he would have won or not, it's hard to know. But he definitely, you know, had his chances mitigated by his trip, and he had a clean outside trip on her up. But I think his improvement is less surprising than others, and I imagine that Mott's not that surprised looking at it, because for Mott to have run him in that race first time this year indicates that he, you know, had high hopes for him, because that's not the kind of move he makes. It's a New York bred like that, you know. I mean, he had what? I imagine it was impossible that he was somewhat encouraged by the fact that he had that good second in a maiden race to Audible, but the Audible that beat him, you know, at the end of 2017 at Aqueduct was not the Audible that ran at Gulfstream. Audible improved in leaps and bounds from his performances at Aqueduct to, was it the Holy Bull, I think he won, first time down in Florida? And people would forget with Audible, Todd wasn't bringing Audible to Florida. Audible was entered in the Damon Runyon. And the Damon Runyon was one of a number of stakes that were canceled and rescheduled a number of times because of the 2 weeks of cancellations we had around the New Year last year. And I think that Todd got frustrated by the cancellations, and that's why he shipped him to Florida. But that was a very different Audible. Now he's a very nice horse, Audible. He's not as good as, you know, Audible got so much of that hype, right, because of the, you know, the tinfoil hat people with the, you know, he should be running in the Belmont, and, you know, there's some conspiracy here and all that nonsense. He wasn't winning the Belmont anyway, and they were fooled by his, you know, his getting this, you know, he was the only horse that closed in the Derby. Well, he wasn't the only horse that closed in the Derby because it was a slow pace. He was the only horse that closed in the Derby because he was the only horse that showed up in the Derby besides the first two finishers. Everybody else just completely didn't show up or just isn't very good. And I think his Florida Derby performance, while it was decent, was somewhat exposed by the subsequent performances of Hofburg throughout the year. While Audible's a nice horse, I think that he had gotten some sort of mystical status because of that nonsense surrounding the idiotic notion that his connection should have run him in the Belmont Stakes, where nobody in their right mind would have. And because of that, he sort of got this sort of, oh, he's this really good horse. And then he came back, and reality intervened, as it always does in horse racing, given enough time, enough opportunities. So anyway, that was a segue from Honor Up to Audible. Who I assume is, suppose, heading for the Pegasus?
Oh, yeah, he's all set. I had Todd on Monday.
I guess. I mean, he doesn't have a race that makes him competitive, but I guess, you know, I mean, listen, I suppose if you're somebody that thinks that, you know, just because John Sadler, you know, had success shipping Accelerate, he is a trainer that has struggled shipping his horses over the, you know, over a long period of time, and, you know, City of Light, who I think is a very good horse as well, well, yep. Who knows? You know, he is kind of a horse that at times has taken time between his races. Maybe he doesn't show up. You want to say, well, the two big two don't show up. I mean, I guess, you know, who are the horses behind him? Who's the third choice? Pattern Recognition's got to get a mile.
Pattern Recognition.
Proved horse, but he's got
Bravazo.
Bravazo is not really a threat to anybody. I mean, he's an okay horse, but he's not.
True Timber.
True Timber is not, you know, not a horse to get a mile and eighth.
Gunavera.
Well, Gunavera is not impossible. He seems to show up.
Seeking the Soul.
He's not a threat.
What about the, then there's that horse of oh my gosh, Al Stahl's, Tom's the Tot.
I mean, you know, I'm very encouraging before he got hurt in 2017 at Saratoga. It took him a long time to get back. I'd love to see him do well. At one time, he was cut off to be a very good horse.
Yeah.
He had a huge allowance win at Saratoga. He got a big fig, I think like a 105 or 106 or something. It looked like he was the only horse that, you know, you might think could throw a scare into Gunrunner in the Woodward. Unfortunately, he broke his leg, but he's back. You know, who knows? Not impossible, I suppose.
There's also, you know, the Stronach horse is a nice horse. That's something awesome.
But he has no chance. He
he's a nice horse.
He is a nice horse, but he's no chance in the race.
Yeah, it's a, and then we're waiting on this 12th horse. And apparently yesterday, Marty McGee gave an update on the fields. They're up to 9 now on the turf side. And Marty
they clearly waved the white flag on whatever they're charging people to run in the Pegasus turf. My problems with the Pegasus are the phony purse, and you know that nobody really knows what the real what people are, and I think it's a mistake by the jockey club to recognize earnings that are losses. You know, I think that's my problem. You know, listen, I mean, you have to credit the Stronach Group on the fact that they have put up but it's the Don with an inflated purse. You know, they've created a race for the Don, which was an afterthought and was obviously getting close to losing its Grade One status for good reason. It used to be such a tremendous race, but it was waning, and they found a way to, turn it into a real focus where they've kept horses in training, and they've got good fields. They got very fortunate the first year, less so last year, and obviously this year is not overly compelling. But, they have turned it into a real race, and it's gotten a lot of talk. I subjected to the way last year with the $650,000 rebate, and it really was $8.4 million purse. But that's really, that's just sort of advertising, I guess, and I just think the Jockey Club should not be recognizing earnings, because the next step is that the Derby, chooses to say, well, it's $25 million to get into the Kentucky Derby, and we'll return $24.9 million of it to all the starters, and the Jockey Club then says, well, there's going to be 20 horses every year that make $24.9 million, at least, and we'll have 20 new money leaders every year for history, and we'll forget all the others. And they can say, well, no, that's just the numbers, so no difference. It could be $100 million each, right? What's the difference? The fact is that, there should be some sort of threshold. I mean, yes, I understand that there's earnings and guys are paying $50,000 to get into a big race, but let's be realistic, this is so, when you look at the year earnings, so many of the leaders of the year with a 10th finisher in the Pegasus, who supposedly made $650,000 last year, but he lost $350,000. Well, that's not the way the industry should be run. I mean, and they know that. I don't know why they would do that. I think that's unfair to the game. But, that's just me, and I think it's an important factor, but I don't think it's not the Stronach Group's fault that they choose to do that, They're just putting up the race. But the turf was probably an ill-advised move by them. But you know what? It's okay to try and fail. It's better to try and fail than never try at all. So to be fair to them, they had an idea, and it just wasn't a great one. That's okay. You're allowed to have bad ideas. Racing would be better off with more bad ideas than no ideas at all.
No doubt.
The turf is, this time of the year, you're never going to get the Europeans. That's probably not the best of turf courses to try to attract top horses. I don't know how you do it and I don't know exactly how or if it could possibly work, And they also did it at a time when there's just a tremendous dearth of talent in the U.S. turf horses. I mean, last year was, let's be frank, wasn't one of our stellar years for U.S. turf horses. So,
as the debate,
a lot of things conspired to make it a less than spectacular. It's a race that would have, okay, they got the Japanese horse, but they probably could have had a purse of $2 million and gotten the exact same field. But listen, like you say, you're never going to succeed if you're not willing to fail. And that's true in life. And the fact that we're talking about the Pegasus is a good thing in racing, right?
Yep.
We wouldn't be talking about the Don. We say, the Don's next weekend. It was always a fun day of racing, but, the one when I was there, I don't think anyone's going to remember Mishawish, who was not even a particularly good turf horse winning, right? I mean, financial modeling was 9-2, I think, off of a win in the Queens County. So, they saw a situation and they did something about it. You have to give them credit for that, at the very least.
It's filled a void. It's made a mundane January weekend into something big.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
Yeah. I saw something that they were saying that they were going to maybe move it to Super Bowl weekend next year because the Super Bowl's in Miami. they made some sort of claim that, imagine the two events, like the Super Bowl and the Pegasus, somehow are comparable events. Thinking, well, what about people that actually do want to go down to the race that now can't get hotel rooms, or if they want, after they exactly. exorbitant rates, I think they should leave it a week earlier, right?
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. You
know? Anyway, but you know, it can't be a that bad a thing if you're talking about it. And it'll be a fun day of racing. And why would anybody not be happy with a fun day of racing?
Well, and there's really, you know, the rest of the there's no Triple Crown the prep things that interfere. It's got the sole right. focus on the weekend.
Right, it's the only race of interest outside of Triple Crown preps in the beginning of the year, and that's for reason. That's for reasonable reason. You know, horses are, they're giving the top horses in theory a bit of a break during this time of the year, and they start to gear up, you know, a couple of months later. But what it's done is what it really is it's part of the prior year. You know, the 2019 Pegasus is sort of a culmination of 2018, right? You know, if Justify had been able to race in theory, he probably would be pointing towards it, right? So there's that. And that would certainly be getting a lot of attention.
Anyway. Yeah.
I'm still looking forward to it.
Now they're drawing on Tuesday. So we'll get, see.
Draw on Tuesday? Draw a day
Tuesday,
early.
Yeah.
Cool. And then the Eclipse Awards are Thursday night. When
yes.
do you get yours Thursday night?
It'll be another Thursday.
What's it like? There's that film festival, the Slam. Is it Slam? Film festival that's sort of for like lower indie movies that are real indie movies now that competes with Sundance.
Okay.
To be like the real Eclipse Awards, where responsible people actually pick the human categories. To be a breakaway from.
Oh, there you go. That's a good idea. That's a
the people who vote, who actually do care about racing and following, and recognize
profits.
That they get them wrong year after year after year. The human category.
I got to ask you about a horse before we talk about
the man about a horse.
Yes, had Jeremiah on Tuesday, and Midnight Curfew came up.
Jeremiah knows winner. Full well where I stand on Midnight Curfew. We had a long talk about him about two weeks ago.
Well,
I think he's a stakes horse, so.
He's going to go through the ring.
They're going to sell him?
They're selling him at OBS.
Jeremiah.
Yes.
He's
yeah.
getting sold?
He's being sold. Mike Ryan, you know, the bloodstock, he's got him in the, he supplemented him to the sale January 29th, 30th.
Oh, does he own him?
Yeah.
No
yep.
kidding.
Yes.
Oh.
I thought that was an interesting. I was surprised nobody actually commented on that the other day from Jeremiah's visit.
What fig did he get? I'm going to look it up right now.
80. Got an 80.
Oh, okay. So nothing spectacular.
No, but solid.
Yeah. No, I had really liked him off his prior race where he was on the dead rail and the pace fell, you know, kind of fell apart. Thought he ran very well before that. Jeremiah, we were talking about him in the race office a few weeks ago. Oh, I see that Mike owns him. Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Listen, he's not in the business of racing, right? So the Midnight Loot went for 150. What do you think they get for him? You got to get 400 for him.
That's exactly right? The number that was in my head. The minute you asked that, I thought 450.
Yeah.
Ready-made horse like this. And of course,
I like this horse. I think he's okay. I really think he's okay. I don't know how to value those horses and everything, but he's already got a maiden win at a mile. I mean, his figure wasn't great, so.
Well, but
well,
he's, sorry, he's
Jeremiah's
advancing.
Gonna lose him.
Well, he might not, because I said to him, it was funny, because he was in the car with Al Gold, and I said to him,
oh,
is Al...
Al
could buy him, sure. Why? That's in Al's wheelhouse.
I was going to say if somebody with overalls bought him, the chair might get him back. But Jeremiah has a funny story to me. Jeremiah is great. Big fan. I think he's also a very good trainer, but I also like him a lot. Really, he's a good guy. and he knows what he's doing.
Well, we're going to watch with interest what happens to this horse. And of
so
course,
when is that sale?
The 29th, 30th.
Where is this? What, Kentucky?
OBS. Ocala.
Oh, they have like a horse of racing age sale or something?
Yeah, it's the January sale, like the Keeneland sale.
I don't know all this stuff.
No.
I'm not as well-rounded as you are, Steve.
They've got pregnant mares, and you've got either broodmare prospects or racing prospects.
I see. Okay.
You got short yearlings.
Interesting. So,
and here's a yearlings. Ready-made. I mean, this is a ready-made horse. Obviously, I was shocked really surprised when I asked about him, and you could hear in Jeremiah's voice the disappointment. I said, well, why don't one of your other clients buy him? And including Al is again. He said that he and Al have talked about it. So. Keep an eye on this.
It depends on price, right? I don't, I wouldn't want to, it's hard to know what these horses are worth. It's not, at least for me, it's not really my field. You can sort of guess, but.
Let me ask you about another performance that also came on Sunday, half an hour later, actually. The effort by blind Willie McTell.
Yeah, I haven't watched the head-on. How badly did he stumble at the start?
That's what I was going to say to you. I was going to ask.
I wasn't in on Sunday.
That's right. You were sick. That's right. You had a sick day.
Yeah.
He stumbled. He stumbled.
I'm gonna watch it right now.
All right. And of course, a real swing of emotions within 24 hours for Jerry Zero, who.
What happened with Jerry?
Well, he was part. He's a partner. He's a partner in that horse of Morley's that went wrong.
Oh, geez, that's a shame. Yeah.
But then 24 hours later, Westerdale, right? Is the name. But then the next day, the horse that he breeds wins another stake. So
I like Jerry. Good man. His son Dave worked with us for a while. His son Dave's a terrific guy. No, Blind Willie McTell's okay. It's, I guess, like always, it's a question how far these horses want to go. But he was engaged with a bunch of other horses in that race for quite a while, and I thought he dug that. And I think the horses that he was running against are good horses. I don't think it's like he was being a bunch of bums. Those horses are okay. I'm getting closer to it. Here we go. Hang on.
Well, the three horses, Andy, from that race in November. It's pretty notable. I mean, Le General is going to go in the Withers.
Mm-hmm.
And even Cadence Courage, who was second again.
Cadence Courage, who was second. He had a perfect trip and a great trip in there and took advantage of the. He stumbled. He didn't go to his face. He stumbled to his knees, but it wasn't major, but it wasn't insignificant. I think he showed a lot of athleticism, sort of quickly overcoming it, to be honest with you. So, listen, I like this horse. I mean, I like Jerry as well. I'm glad to see him doing well. But I like this horse. I think he's okay. I mean, it's like all these horses. How far are they going to want to go? I mean, but I think I don't know what the schedule looks like. But I mean, you have to think that they're trying to get him to the Bayshore, because you want to try a race like the Bayshore. The Bayshore is the first race for us. The greatest stakes for 3-year-old sprinting, the Bayshore. And now the Woody Stevens, the grade one, obviously there's a prep in between for those, but it might even be the Run Happy now, or maybe that's for older horses, I can't remember exactly. Maybe it's the Gold Fever, one of those. And then, the Amsterdam and the Kings and then Alan Jerkins. So now there are two grade ones in there. And that's a great series of races, and the Bayshore is the first one on Wood Day. That has to be the race that you've circled. To me, Lid is supposed to be thinking, what can I do to try to get him there and see if he can, A, get seven and do it against what are going to be a tougher bunch of horses? And it'll give you an idea of where you stand. I mean, the worst thing you can do is never figure out where you stand with these horses. It's okay to run these races and lose.
Sure.
It's not okay not to lose, You've got to test the horse's limits and his ability. And I think he has some talent.
Who I in that race that I was keeping an eye on because I kind of find, I think it's an interesting story, and I've tried to get him on the show, and I haven't been able. Peter Casamias, with that mare of his, he doesn't know me.
How could anybody not know you, Steve?
uh, that mare of his, that Bearnik, the Chimes Band mare that he produced Bearnik's Bank, you know, the
million dollars they turned out $1 million for him.
Yeah, that might not have been such a great move.
In for me.
Yeah. He's had a lot of success with that mare. She's thrown nothing but winners.
He's done well with a lot of horses with very moderate breeding.
Yes.
Yes, they have. Yeah, I've been on for a while. So I think
he didn't run bad.
Don't you have somebody interesting to come on after me?
Well, I've got. We're going to talk to Rich Eng, and we've got Neil Howard. I want to get to Neil. And,
tell Neil I said hi.
I will.
He's such a good guy.
Yes, he is.
I've seen him in a while.
Well.
That's nice. What's Neil? Does Neil have a good horse going on here?
He's, you know, he's got his normal horse. Actually, he does have what looks like a good 3-year-old sort of bubbling under the radar. But unfortunately, he had an exercise rider badly injured. A week ago Monday, he had a head-on collision that killed two horses.
Sorry.
And Roddy McKenzie, a veteran exercise rider, is hurt. And I wanted Neil to, we want to direct people to a way to help Roddy and his family.
Oh, okay. Let me know.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Well, get them on. They're more important. I'll talk to you later.
I appreciate it. Andy Serling, everybody. And the racing will resume on Friday, tomorrow, at Aqueduct. The Toboggan. Toboggan on
Saturday. See you later.
Great historic. Bye. See you, Andy. Thank you, buddy. The Toboggan, one of the great historic races in the country. And I think 100 and... My God, goes back to go back to Jerome Park or Morris Park? Morris Park, I think. I think Morris. What was in Westchester? Is that I think Morris Park, and they called it Toboggan. It was, it's named the Toboggan because of they had the 7-furlong course that came through the middle of the from the infield, and somebody wrote kind of disparagingly about the Toboggan Run. And I guess it was probably Jerome that named the stake the Toboggan in response to that. The Toboggan and Gold for the King, who came up just minutes ago, and of course we talked about with Nick in the Safe Florida Sandy, was bottled up. He's going to run back. Charlton Baker entering back in anger, I think, a little bit. And the New York bred. Skylar Scramjet, one of Andy's absolute favorites, a horse that he pointed everybody toward last year he went on a nice run. Colonel Sharp, Hugh McMahon coming up with the Dave's Friend winner. Nice. You got Bal Harbor for the Brunettis coming out of the Queens County, cutting back. And Solid Wager, who makes a transfer from Peter Miller's barn all the way to Chris Engelhart. So Gary Barber and Solid Wager come to New York. And I'm wondering if he's, I mean, obviously they're involved. They're heavily involved in the Palos Verde. So I guess the idea was let's ship to New York and run there. So Solid Wager comes east. That's nice. So two horses ship in from Maryland and California. Pretty cool for the Toboggan on Saturday. There's also a good maiden race, I'm noting. In the first, there's fillies going three quarters. And one of them is a horse that was discussed on the show by Chuck Lawrence. Shanghai Bonnie for Matt Shira. Yeah. Catches my eye. And of course she came back and just got beat a nose at 90 cents on the dollar on New Year's Eve at Laurel in the slop. So this actually looks like this is a nice group. There looks like there's some nice fillies to follow in here in the first race on Saturday. Let's take a break here. We've got Rich Eng to get to, and maybe this is the spot the case. I think we should reach out for Neil Howard here. All right. Very good. Back after this, about 20 minutes in on this Thursday, and we'll look ahead, actually, a reminder of that race at Fairgrounds today, 2:23 Central, 3:23 Eastern. Gunnit, your 7-5 favorite. Let's take a look as we go to the break. Let's take a look at the conditions. in NOLA. Hopefully, as we continue to sweat out the Saturday Saturday action, they're clear. They're overcast, but no rain in sight. And, the forecast now down to 60%. That's great. All right. Only a 60% chance of rain now. It's diminishing for Saturday. Nice to hear that. We'll talk to Marcus. We'll probably recap this race with Marcus tomorrow. The fifth at Fairgrounds today, mile and 70 yards. Gunnett, Cornacchia, Frolicmore, Owendale, the four of the six. Bobby Barnett's got a recent maiden winner named Philippe, and Cassie's got an Oxley making a dirt start blockbuster. So, six-pack for the fifth at Fairgrounds today. Back after this with Neil.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.